Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sun.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Welcome back from football weekend and, of course, the 15th anniversary of 9/11 on yesterday, and of course, obviously, very sad. The greatest tragedy in American history, and of course, we pay homage to those who lost their lives and those who helped defend our country once again. And I think that is an important fact that we are the greatest nation in the world, and we have to take care of our own, and we have to clean up the crap that's out there. So hopefully, we'll get through this, and we'll get through the protests during the national anthem, which, again, to me, don't make a heck of a lot of sense, although they do have the right to do that. I think they are choosing the wrong venue. But that's just one man's opinion. And, of course, as we go back and look at Friday's action and today's action, the markets themselves look under pressure. There seems to be some chatter that the Fed will increase interest rates. And, of course, we've got every one of these Fed, I'd like to use the real word, the Fed is out with a different speech every day. These speakers, and I'm tired of the Fed. I'm tired of listening to them. I'm tired of hearing their crap. I'm tired of their rhetoric and them floating their test balloons to see how the market reacts. Again, I don't know why they care so much about the stock market and compared to the rest of the things that go on, the punishment and torture of the middle class, or the destruction of it's just stupid. I mean, it's just past. We are past anything that resembles what was supposed to be done based on what they told us they were going to do. I mean, in my opinion, they're just a bunch of economists that work off the theory and are sitting there with their slide rule and their calculators trying to make the system fit into their theory, which, of course, is not the way that life works. And to me, it is just dumb. That's all I can say about that. But at the end of the day, here we are, and we've got, markets under pressure, and now figure to be under greater pressure. We could see some pretty heavy selling over the next couple of days, and probably longer. I think this may be the start. I think that's what will be important here, is how we go about trading here and watching the actual, what we'll call the tape action. And, this week is also the old-fashioned triple witching expiration, which is not the triple witching expiration that we all remember from when it was really volatile, because they've eliminated a lot of that volatility. But what we do know is that the markets are certainly overvalued. There are certainly been being built on greed, people buying stock with money they don't have. And we'll see where we go from here, but I would certainly say that it is ugly. I would certainly say that this should be no surprise. I hope that everybody is hedged, protected, and set up for the impending market sell-off. And the only reason you should be prepared for that is because I don't want you to have to sell out at the bottom because you're panicking or puking. I want you to be able to live through it and buy more because, again, the stock markets in history have shown that they will go up year over year, just not every year. But we just have so many issues that we don't address. And the business model that we are running under is just ignorance. I mean, I don't know. I know a lot of you out there are entrepreneurs and self-employed and run your own business. And, you know, you all know that what's going on is just not realistic, cannot be sustained, and is just ripping the country apart. And, you know, I don't know. You know, we'll get a lot of explanation to this tomorrow when our good friend, ex-Fed employee, Danielle DiMartino Booth, will show up and spend the day with me talking about just the imbecilic moves that the Fed makes. And who wants to hear them talk anymore? I mean, I think that you're probably, you know, time to end the Fed. I think it needs to be, if there's going to be a Federal Reserve, which I'm not so certain that they do anything worthwhile, I think that it has to be at least reorganized. Yeah, maybe we should go into Chapter 11, reorganization. It's becoming a tragedy that when you look around and you see the devastation to the small guy, and then you see the new bubble that's being created, courtesy of our Federal Reserve. You know, we've got, you know, rent, which is in a bubble because nobody can buy houses anymore. So as much as we hear about these low rates, nobody can really take advantage of them. We've got the millennial generation that now, you know, doesn't really support the economy. You know, they're not really interested in buying you know, homes or cars. You know, they've learned to either live at home with their parents, and, you know, they've now become more of the Uber type generation, you know, even public transportation. And, you know, at the end of the day, that will also have a ripple effect. But the ripple effect is caused really because of the stupid, ignorant, incompetent messages and actions being taken by our people that are in charge. And we can start right at the top of anybody who brags about how great the jobs are is ridiculous and is trying to prove some point that isn't unprovable. Okay? Jobs suck. People are not making any money. Okay? And you can see that in the increase in gambling. Okay, gambling, you know, is usually higher when times are tough. People are looking for the miracle. You can see that in the liquor sales, you know, because obviously people are depressed or upset. They tend to drink more. You've got just one thing after another that is showing us, and not to mention, of course, the violence that is out there, based on, you know, the lack of money, the lack of being able to live good. And, you know, we should be able to do a much better job at what's going on. And it's sad that we're not. But again, we will cover much of this tomorrow with our friend Danielle DiMartino Booth from Money Strong, but also an ex-employee of the Federal Reserve. In the meantime, you know, when you miss an episode, you go to my radio station, you go to libertytalk.fm and download the Bubba Show as well as the Sporting Edge. And also, you know, we've got full programming there, you know, 24 hours a day. A lot of other good shows that you can check out. So make sure you go to libertytalk.fm. Also, make sure you take the time to check out bubbatrading.com. We continue to improve and look for things to help make your financial life better. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm going to step out for a break, and we'll be right back with Jane King.
Follow me.
We'll see you next week. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, will be right back.
Stay with me, man.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. It's time for the one and only Jane King, Lila Max Media, the Ka-Ching Report. She just brings good things to life. And Jane King, when are you going to bring this market to life?
Oh, my gosh. Is this the most boring market you have ever seen? I mean, thank goodness. We've got elections, and there's actually some, you know, pretty interesting news going on out there because the stock market is really doing nothing, although we have seen the NASDAQ hit record highs. So I guess that's something. If you're an investor in Amazon or Facebook, it's been a good year.
It's been an unbelievable year. You know, I got it. In 2004, what were you doing in 2004?
I was working for CNN. I was in New York. So I'm an old timer. I mean, I've been around this for a while.
Well, no, I know. You started in 2000, right?
Yeah.
Right. Well, so no, in 2004, you know, people forget, you know, we traders and investors, well, investors like it when it's like this because they don't have as much to worry about, right? There's not as much volatility in the market, so their portfolios aren't swinging around up and down.
Yeah.
But in 2004, you know, we had the same scenario without all the other outside information that was going on. But, you know, in 2004, the volatility index hit 9. Okay, and you know, I was sitting in my office. You know, those were days we were already, you know, transitioning from off the floor. And, you know, volatility at 9, you know, I'd look at my partner and I go, where are we going to make a living? How are we going to ever trade again? There's no business, right?
Right.
And this is the same thing.
You know, I used to work with, you know, when I was at the Chicago Board of Trade, now the CME. I mean, traders, you know, used to tell me, it was like, they were like, volatility is opportunity. So, you know, they like that. But like not the you know, buy and hold type, but the, you know, the people who looked at technical analysis and put moves in the market. They love the volatility. So I don't know what they're doing these days, though.
Well, I call volatility the great forgiver, because volatility allows you to make more trades, which create more opportunity. And if you're very disciplined, listen, there's losing trades no matter who you are, but you have a losing trade, you know what you're going to lose. But the winners, they, when they get crazy, they just take off. And that is why traders need volatility to exist, because without it, you just can't go. There's not enough money to be made when the markets are grinding like we are grinding right now. And it's obviously it's torturous and it's tough. But that is part of the business, and that's part of learning the business. And you know, I ran into something interesting the other day, and I want to run this by you because I know your background of the farming, you know, the farming business. And, you know, as you've watched, you know, I don't know if you've watched it all, but cattle and has been going and getting just clobbered. Okay.
Yeah. And 5-year lows. And I know it's tough.
And the banks are now puking out and calling in a lot of notes that are out there, because as we all know, farmers have to borrow a lot of money because it's very expensive to run a farm. You know, where you're putting your crops on the ground. What do you think when that happens? When the banks, they know what their exposure is, but they start puking, and then they force these poor guys out or poor families out at the bottom of the market because they're afraid that they're going to lose their money. Do you think anything about that? Do you have any thought about that?
I guess? Well, you know, I mean, here's the thing. If you're a bank, you know, it's funny because like when I was growing up, and I was in high school, and I was still kind of, you know, naive and didn't know like much about the markets and money and all that stuff. And I remember I was riding in the pickup truck with my dad, and I said, you know, I was like, I don't understand how banks make money. Like, they're always loaning money out and all this. And, like, he looked at me and goes, don't you ever feel sorry for the banks. And it's funny because I, you know, like, going through 2008 and some of the things that I've learned since then, I'm like, boy, was he right. I mean, so, yeah, what's the saying about banks? They give you an umbrella when it's sunny and take it away when it rains. I mean, you know, it's just, that was why my parents, you know, just wore the same clothes for 30 years. I mean, they never wanted to have debt because they never wanted to be in that situation. And they always wanted to be in a position to take advantage of, you know, when someone, you know, had to sell or get something at a good price. So, you know, my feeling is like, look, if you're a bank, I mean, you loan money, then that's the risk you take. I mean, they're basically like win-win, and that's just, you know, it's not a good business. So, I mean, I hope that they're, you know, somehow, you know, working with these farmers, you know, in Texas, they like feeder cattle 5-year low. I mean, they had that horrible drought in 2011. And, you know, just so many farmers lost so many cattle and, you know, prices went way up. And, but the, you know, that's the thing about farming is, like, for prices to go up, there has to be some kind of disaster. And so it's just really tough being in the agriculture industry. And you have to be, you know, really, really savvy and really shrewd to be able to make a living doing it.
That's right. Now, this brings me to my next question, okay? Now, we know that, you know, we hear a lot about monopolies, and, you know, there's the Bayer Monsanto potential merger, and the Walgreens Rite Aid potential merger, and all these are subject to the what's the act they call? I forgot already, but whatever the act is, but about preventing monopolies. But in the meantime, are not the banks a monopoly? I mean, is that not the same thing? Do they not control everything? I mean, there's basically eight or nine banks that control the entire world. So are they not a monopoly? And so why do we care if Bayer and Monsanto merge, or if Rite Aid and Walgreens merge? I mean, what difference does it make? Everything's becoming so big, they're eliminating all the small guys anyway. So can you explain to me why they care?
Yeah, well, you know, I know that Charles Grassley is going to be holding hearings on, I mean, not just Bayer Monsanto, but some of the other agriculture mergers that have taken place. I know Mosaic is working on something. And we could thank, I think, the federal government for our lack of banking options in this country. I mean, we basically have, and if you want to be the person, if you want to be a person who has an account in a bank, and you know it's safe, and you have access to your money, whether you're traveling or not, you know, you go with, like, Chase or Bank of America. Even Wells Fargo, it's hard to find in New York. There's one in Times Square, but, I mean, there's a Chase on every corner in New York. So, you know, the only real competition that's going to happen with the banks is electronic digital paying. We're not going to have a startup banks. I mean, it's just too difficult and it's too controlled. We're only going to see it with, like, some of these, you know, PayPal and Venmo, and some of those are going to take some of the bank's business.
Yeah, and it's funny, and it makes the bigger case now for, you know, some of the cryptocurrencies that are, you know, Bitcoin being one. But, I mean, do you know much about that, or have you followed much of that, those things, and do they mean anything if you have?
Well, a little bit. Of course, it was big a couple of years ago. Bitcoin has kind of died off a little bit since then. I mean, the whole concept is hard to get your head around. I mean, you don't actually have a coin. I mean, why is it called Bitcoin? Like, people are really confused. People are having a hard time just understanding, like, I don't actually take out something I can touch and pay for it, whether it's a credit card or it's actual currency. But, you know, I mean, it's a thinly traded market. I know there's some big supporters of it, the CEO of Overstock. There's been others. But I don't think it's something that's really it's not mainstream right now. There's a Bitcoin store down by Wall Street, down by the New York Stock Exchange. But I wouldn't put my money in that. But it's very interesting. And I see, you know, why people do it. I mean, I would rather do, like, the electronic and the digital payments through PayPal and things like that.
No, I understand. I mean, again, it's interesting because what's really happening, I think, is people are really tired of the Federal Reserve. They're tired of the accounting of everything that goes through. And, of course, there's other ways they're trying to accumulate money because, as we know, the governments around the world are trying to eliminate all their big bills. You know, the euro is trying to get rid of the 500-euro bill, and in the United States, we're talking about getting rid of the $100 bill. I mean, and people are trying to find a way to have that money stored away because, you know, the government can come in and take things away, which is one of the problems with physical gold. You know what I mean? So it's a problem, which is why people are trying to find other ways to get their money out of countries and things like that. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of interesting topics that brings up. I mean, first of all, it's the danger of a big government, right? I mean, we can come and take this away from you, and we're in a crisis. And, you know, I talked about that with my family in the farmlands. I've been like, gosh, I can see, you know, the way this country is going, or at least was a couple of years ago. It seems to have slowed down a little bit. But I can see the government coming, if there's some kind of food crisis, and just taking over farmland and using the excuse that, well, we helped farmers, you know, with subsidies and things like that for so many years that we're due some of this. I can totally see that happen under certain circumstances. I mean, we lived through 2008 and 2009, and we saw what happened. So, you know, and if gold is such a bad thing, why does the Federal Reserve hold so much of it? I think that's another question. And, I mean, I think, you know, this week it was so interesting to hear Donald Trump talking about the Fed and how they're propping up in a false economy, something you and I have been talking about for years. And then Hillary Clinton saying, why Donald Trump should not even be talking about the Fed. And I was kind of like, I didn't think that was a very good answer on her part, because the Fed is, like, hugely important. And I think it's very important that a president understands what the Fed does, has some kind of judicial opinion about what it is and understand how it works in the economy. I said that it was kind of naive for her to say that, and I think he's right about what the Fed's doing, keeping interest rates low.
Jane King, you are the best. As always, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
That was our friend Jane King from Lila Max Media in the Kitching Report. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwich. You missed an episode, libertytalk.fm. You can download it, and we will be back after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwich. We'll be right back.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwich, and it's time for the guy who actually called this type of action, and his name is Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com, and Matt's been pretty much on top of this market, but also tortured like the rest of us. Welcome aboard, Matt.
Thanks for having me, Todd. Always good to be here.
It's always great to have you because, again, you're our kind of guy because you just kind of tell it straight. There's not a lot of BS about, you know, well, maybe this will happen, that, and then, you know, it's just straight out, here it is, and it's either going to work or it's not going to work, and if it's not going to work, we're going to get out and take our loss and move on. So, Matt, you know, obviously Friday was a pretty dramatic day. Not surprising to, I think, you and me and to the listeners. I think that maybe that it all happened and took place on Friday is, you know, unusual, but, I mean, not really unusual, just it happens. What was your thoughts on the overall action of the market on Friday?
Well, I mean, it fits with what we've been looking for. You know, volatility has been building up, you know, and the commercial position has been building up volatility. So we knew that when it was going to happen, it should be a volatile move. And it basically was a straight down move. So it fits with what we were thinking. And, you know, frankly, I think it's going to continue.
Well, you know, and I think it is too. But I think one of the key things now we want to teach and kind of have investors understand, or traders as well, of course, but is that, you know, the market action, a lot of the action will take place over the next few days. First of all, we are coming into a triple witching expiration, which is usually a little bit volatile on its own. But of course, they have managed to ruin that for traders as well by, you know, expiring. I mean, almost everything's expired by the time it gets there, right? But overall, there are certain types of action you look for off of moves like we just had on Friday. And I think that's kind of what we want to talk about a little bit is, you know, we had a nice big sell-off, and we'll see where we go from here. But, again, you don't really want to be someone who's going to try to chase them down here, you know, down when they're on the bottoms. What you'd really be looking for is a little spot and a little resistance or a little small retracement to rally. And when you see markets that are very strong, typically they usually sell off a little bit in the mornings, and then you buy into that sell-off, and that's where the rallies come because everybody's worried about the sell-off. And now, if this is going to be the final curtain for a little while, then you would look to sell strength on morning rallies as the most part if you had a reasonable spot to sell. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, that, you know, the next bounce we get, that's what we want to be selling into. I mean, yeah, when you go straight down, it's not usually a good call to, you know, just short right into that or sell into it. So yeah, I'd be looking for a bounce first and then sell into it. And we're kind of at a strange place here where, you know, where we broke out from in the S&P, we're basically back down to that breakout level. So, you know, if you could still be a bull. Bull could still make a very good argument and say, look, you know, all we've done is come back and retested the breakout level, which, you know, pretty much had to happen at some point. So, yeah, there's a very good chance we get a bounce somewhere in here, and that would be one that we'd be shorting into.
And certainly, if you are a bull, you're certainly somebody who would be, right now, based on the past history, smarter than anybody else, because overall, every one of these big sell-offs has been met with buyers pretty quickly afterwards. Is that not been what you've been seeing, basically?
Yeah, it has, you know, and, you know, everybody, you know, on the mainstream media says this is the most hated bull market of all time or whatever they happen to say about it. But really, you know, and they say cash levels are high. Cash levels are not high. And when we went into, you know, last week, the hedge funds had their largest position net long for, I think it was over 12 months at least. So they were the most net long they'd been for over a year. Mutual fund cash levels were down to close to record levels, not absolute lows, but you know, within one or two other data points that were lower in the past, you know, 10 or 20 years. So really, you know, buyers can step in. I'm just curious where the buying power is going to come from, though.
Well, I mean, I think it'll be, I mean, my personal opinion will be we'll definitely see some. Look, at in 2008, if anybody forgets, we had monster rallies. You had plenty of opportunity in 08 either to liquidate out or to sell into the rallies. And anybody who didn't, that was more of a function of not understanding or trying to or being too afraid or whatever about the markets. But there's always ways to trade the market, and there's always opportunities. Would you agree with that, first of all?
Absolutely.
Okay. So now, I mean, you know, you have to look at the market and find levels that you want to think, but you certainly, if you are a bull, which is, again, there's nothing wrong with being a bull, and certainly in history there's nothing wrong with being a bull, but if you believe you're looking for a spot, then you'd be looking to be a buyer somewhere down here, down near these lows. And if you're looking more on from the bearer standpoint, you'd be looking for a rally, you know, into you know, some resistance levels, an area that gives you, you know, comfort, knowing that it's a fair possibility that it will break there. You know, I saw that great chart you put out on the VXD this weekend, and I thought it was unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's, I think it's great. I mean, and that's kind of what's giving me the confidence that we're going to see lower lows in the market, because that was a very big volatility pattern. The size of it wasn't really shown that well in that chart, but basically it goes back 10 years. So it's a very large pattern. And, you know, my thinking is that if you look at BXD or VIX, as more people are familiar with, I don't think, you know, the sell-off we're going to see is going to be over until, you know, volatility gets at least into the 20s. Maybe most likely the high 20s would be the minimum, I would think. But, you know, I just take a step back and say, this has gone on a lot longer than we thought, too, as far as the, you know, the market, you know, rising to new higher levels. And buyers have always stepped in, and I thought you were going to say it, but probably the buyers are going to step in are going to be the shorts. They're going to, you know, there's going to be short covering rallies along the way, and that will be, you know, what takes us up, and there'll be plenty of time, opportunity to sell.
Oh, no, I couldn't agree more. And I would have probably gotten there, because that's obviously where my mind would be. But I think that, you know, you're going to see. And again, I think this is the important part to understand in markets, is the way that they actually work. There's certain things that happen at certain points in time, and you have to be ready for them and not try to be the person trying to, you know, chase the dream of gambling about in this market. I mean, there's very, very, very meticulous work that Matt does getting prepared for this. And what you have to realize and start to understand is the function and what the markets do, because they're not going to, you know, we could see continuation selling, but typically there's almost 99.9% of the time there's going to be a rally somewhere that will give you a much better entry to short if that is the position that you believe is correct, which Matt and I both agree. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, no, just I'd say the same thing. I agree. And I think you get a lot more satisfaction out of that as well. I mean, if you the second you sell into a steep drop is the second it turns around and reverses on you. It always seems to be that way anyway. But I think you'd wait for minimum level of bounce, maybe a half, once you've fallen, if you want to see a bounce back, maybe if half of what you lost that day, that sort of thing, I think that's sort of a good, rule of thumb. Or if you just happen to see, if you're watching, indicators like we are, like RSI and stochastics, on shorter term levels, like, under a day, then you can get a sense of when, your bounce is going to peak out and you can sell short then.
Exactly. And again, these are little tools and tricks of the trade, and they're not really tricks, but they're things that, a guy like Matt, I mean, this is how he makes his career. This is what he does. And this is what he, when he comes on the show and talks about how these things work, I mean, what we really want you to understand is the function of how, what really makes the market work. Because at the end of the day, that's what will make you more successful. That's where Matt's value comes in, is understanding how the charts work and then how the markets work going along with that. What do you say about that, young man?
It's very complimentary, and I appreciate it. Yeah, no, we spend a lot of time looking at charts and a lot of time determining where the levels are. So, yeah, it's worth the effort. For the past 3 months, we've been waiting for something to happen, and, eventually it pays off.
Well, yeah, I mean, and this goes back to the business itself. You start to see things, and when you're reading the footprint of what we talk about all the time, to understand the market, that is the biggest single item that you can understand that gives you a clue to kind of get you in rhythm with what the markets are doing. What do you think about that, sir?
Absolutely. And in addition to the price patterns themselves, we've been talking, at length about what the commercials have been doing, what the big banks have been doing, and they've been shorting, Dow, S&P, NASDAQ futures. They've been short, they've been going long VIX futures in a big, big way. Speaking of which, this past COT report, which is now going to be out of date because of the drop we had on Friday, but that report showed that they had increased their volatility position again. They were up. It was questionable last week whether, which way you looked at it, whether or not they were at an all-time high in their VIX futures position. This past report, they were definitively at an all-time high.
And of course, and there you have it. And of course, I know somebody named Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com who had actually stated and was looking for this exact type of action. And again, warning of the things that do happen in markets, that they're not always easy and it's not like stealing, but that you have the opportunities. We are with my guy, Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. Make sure you check out his stuff. And of course, he's going to tell us about his gold call when we come back from the break and some of the other things he's doing. But this is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horace. When you miss an episode, LibertyTalk.fm will get you the download of the podcast every day. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horace. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Matt Demeter, DemeterResearch.com. So, Matt, I want to talk about the gold special because we saw some pretty interesting action over the last couple of weeks in gold as well. And I want to know what your process, your thoughts are here, and where you expect it to go, and how you're seeing it right now.
Well, we talk about footprints, particularly in gold and silver, which I believe are the two of the most manipulated markets out there. The banks are heavily, heavily short. That hasn't changed as of the last COT report. In gold, the commercials are at their second all-time largest short position, and their all-time largest short position was just a month ago. So they're at record levels. We should see further weakness in gold. There's still that chance that we haven't quite. On this move up, this bull move up that we've had since December, it's possible we haven't made it all the way up to what I think would be roughly 1,400 per ounce. But we got to about 1,380. So we came very close, and you know, I think that the down the next big down leg has already begun. And when we do get to our final bottom line, that goes into our gold special. That level is below the December low. We have a very clear line. It's a inclined line, but we're nowhere near it. So what we plan to do is send out a text and a email message when we hit that line, when we believe gold is actually bottomed. And, you know, we care about being absolutely, you know, correct and having some, you know, precision with this. So if we, when we get close to the line, we're going to send out that text and email. We have to bounce within 3% of our call. And then we need to rally at least 20%. If both those things happen, then we'll charge $49. Otherwise, it's free.
So a no-risk guy that says he can call the bottom, and I actually believe that he can. I believe in his work. So, you know, obviously he does bring a lot of good work to the program and always gives you the straight-up scoop, which is the most important thing, is to have a great understanding of the function of the market. So, Matt, you know, what did you think about the commodity space, you know, obviously the more or less the grains and things? I thought that, you know, wheat and corn looked like they have finally really, really put in that bottom, and I think they look to be working higher. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I like them both as well. I think they are going to work higher. There's a, I have a little hesitation about corn. There's a, the level where it peaked out last week. I want to see it, you know, push above that, and if it does that, then my concerns are gonna, you know, kind of go away. But it is a potential pivot level, which concerns me. But otherwise, you know, everything else I'm looking at looks fairly bullish. As far as the, you know, sentiment is horrible. Corn, wheat is the most hated commodity right now of the 60 markets we look at. Corn is the third most hated. Cattle is the second most hated. So they're like this group. Should bounce, and you know, and long-term indicators, they're all, you know, deeply oversold. So it's a good time to be bullish.
Right, and it looked to me, just, you know, looking at the picture, that they were seeing some higher lows now, you know, and one thing I think I try to make clear to everybody is it ain't going to be easy. It's like, it's not like they're sending you a telegram saying, hey, we're going up now, make sure you buy and get in. There's going to be a lot of whip to the market, and they're not going to just go up and go straight up and say, okay, well, you know, we know you want to be long now, so let's go and make it easy. That is not how the markets function. What we're going to see is a lot of, I think, wilder trade, but I think the key is it not the key at the end of the day, if you're looking for a market to move higher, that it starts to make higher lows.
Do you want to see
higher lows? That's what you're looking for.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. We've seen a higher low, and I think, you know, it's both wheat and corn are looking good. Soybeans, I can make an argument for a rally there too. The way we've done it is, you know, we've gone long JJG, which is an ETF that covers all three of them. Gives a little bit of diversification that way, but I would definitely think wheat, corn are good contenders for, you know, higher levels.
Yeah, no, and I agree with that. I mean, again, I've been bullish in the space, and I think that, you know, between everything else. So let's relate it into the dollar here now. Sure. What's your thoughts on the dollar here?
I will say one more thing about corn, though. I do want to see it. You know, push to a new high. Not just the high of last week. Get above that, like I said, then my concern about a potential pivot area is gone. Getting over to the dollar, you know, nothing seems to be able to knock the dollar down much. Rates are going higher. Here's the problem. It's not really. It's still in between strong support and strong resistance. So, you know, I have a generally bearish, I'm more bearish than bullish. Longer term, I'm bullish, let's put it that way. Short term, it could go either way. I'm looking for roughly, we bottomed at 94 not too long ago. I'm looking for right around there again, just a little bit below, say high 93s, and then we'd be, you know, big buyers.
Now, I look at things, and to me, it looks like a lot of things have been kind of priced in to this market, okay? In other words, in my views, I think that, you know, the higher dollar has already been kind of priced into some of these commodities. And I think that they've already overreacted, which is why I believe that we may see somewhere near the bottom here. What are your thoughts to that?
Yeah, so in the short term, that's really where I was trying to go. In the short term, I do think, you know, we'd be more bearish than bullish the dollar. But then, you know, in the more medium long term, I don't think there's a chance it's peaked already, but I think there's one more rally north. And part of that has to do with the fact that yen is starting to look like it's, you know, getting toppy, or dollar yen is starting to look like it's starting to bottom out. It hasn't quite reached our dollar yen hasn't reached our final bottom yet before we see a big bounce. But I think losses in the yen will translate into dollar strength. Euro still has one. We still have a target that's lower that hasn't been hit. So put those two together and you eventually have a higher dollar down the road. I don't, but in the very short term, I'd be more bearish on the dollar.
No, I actually, my thought, and let me get your opinion. My thought is that I'm a little bearish on the dollar as well, but I do think it's going to pop. And I think that it may tie into rate. You know, you can put any reason, any spin you want onto it. But at the end of the day, I think it ties into the rates, and I think you see one more big pop up, and after that, you then, you know, we'll figure out where we're going to go from there. But at the end of the day, I think it will directly be tied. The initial move is tied to the Fed and what they do with the rates, and I think what we're going to finally see is that nobody gives a crap, and they're going to say, okay, fine, and then everything will go its route. And I think that the commodity space has already kind of priced in this move that I'm talking about right now, which nobody's even seen any news on it yet, but I'm calling for it.
That we will see a rate increase?
I'm not saying that necessarily we'll see the increase. I'm telling you that I think we're going to see the anticipation of the increase. I think that had a lot to do with Friday's action. You know, I watched I had no information. I didn't care. I was out by the pool, okay? And I was trading by the pool, but I didn't care why it was moving like it was moving. It just looked to me that if I were going to make a guess of some of the news that was about it, it had something to do with some type of rates or something that the Federal Reserve was doing, creating all that volatility at one time. It doesn't matter why, but the levels were right, and the action looked like it was directly related or correlated to the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, I think it's the Fed, and I think it's the ECB as well. I mean, part of, you know, really the sell-off, we could say, actually began shortly after Mario Draghi didn't confirm to the market that they were going to continue their bond buying, you know, past March. Surely they, well, everybody expects that they will, and I do too. But the fact that they did not confirm that they would, I think that might have had something to do with long-term rates rising along, you know, globally. Obviously, European bond rates, you know, went up, and I think that rippled over to us as well. And yeah, and I agree. I think a lot of people think that, you know, there's a reasonable chance the Fed will still raise, even though, you know, the last jobs number wasn't, you know, a blowout. You know, all those things seem to combine together. What are the central banks doing, and what is that doing at rates?
So, I think they got no balls, but unfortunately, I got no time. This is Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. Always great stuff, Matt, and I think it'll be interesting to see the action this week. And next week, we have a big gangbuster conversation. Thanks for being here.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Todd.
This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you go to LibertyTalk.fm and download the daily podcast, as well as The Sporting Edge. And we will see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horse. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks so much. So world, I just spin
around. Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.